106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses. Hit it.
Let's tidy up this tangle of film by putting it on a reel. Here is a motion picture film, 1,000 feet, 16,000 separate photographs.
Welcome, everybody.
Hey everybody, I'm Michael.
I'm Ian.
I'm Antonio.
And we're your real debaters this week. Welcome to where the art of cinema meets the power of debate. You got to say that more than once a week to get it right, guys. Welcome back, listener. Welcome to the show. Thank you for tuning in. It's going to be an interesting conversation. This is going to be a little bit of a gripe. This is going to be less of an argument, I think, more of a roundtable of where are we at with the industry. But we're not... You've heard us say this. We're not professionals here at The Real Debaters. We're a motley crew of cinephiles. The only one of us who's actually a professional would be Ian.
Yeah.
Because he's in the industry, yes. Right? Like, yes. He makes stuff. But all of us shit talk. All of us, you know, we're adjacent. We love it. We work in it, but we're not part of it. But we love to talk about it. And the film review and the review process, as much as AI is now eating up how the industry operates and costs are now changing and how movies are made. Like, there's a lot of things that I think are changing in how movies are done in the last 20 years.
Right.
More so than I think anything in our childhood. So let's have a conversation about the review, the critic, the process of it. Is it fair to let metadata and algorithms control art? Do you trust those reviews that are done collectively? Do you trust Rotten Tomatoes? Do you love Letterboxd for the fact that it shares movies with other people and your friends? And it's less about the, well, I mean, my reviews, I try to be less about the hobnob of film, but whatever. The point of what I'm saying is we're going to talk about it, and it's funny because we're going to review movies before we get into it, so it's a little meta. So that's what's on the show. This is who is on the show. Before we get into it, we just want to let you know what's going on in our world. Ian, how is Strong
Sun
happening?
Strong Sun is my first feature film.
Yeah, 4-point films.
Okay. And it's, it was a 20-day shoot. We shot all in Winnipeg. It was exhausting and tiring. We're in post now. No real pickups we have to do, it seems, so far.
Nice.
So we're just looking at my editor is just figuring out, he's in Toronto, and we're figuring, he's doing like an assembly, so we're just kind of seeing what it looks like for now.
Okay.
And kind of seeing like I think he kind of sent us the first like 8 minutes just to see if he's in the right ballpark of tone. And it's also like this thing where I was like, I wanted to edit. It's good that I'm not editing. I'm going to definitely have a hand in a deep hand in it once we get in the thick of it a bit more. It's going to take forever. Like, it feels like already the journey, because it's like, you know, a short film, you can nitpick like 1 to 2 minutes. In a feature, you're nitpicking 1 to 2 minutes of a giant, you know, like 90 minute thing. So it feels like it's just it's gonna be crazy and take forever. And you know, I just, in some sense, I'm so happy it's done, but I'm still in the thick of it. And I have like multiple other projects I got to get started now while that one's done. So yeah, it's
many plates it's being spun in many different.
It's a good thing. It's the reminder of like, this is what I've always wanted.
You asked for this, motherfucker.
Yeah. But it's great. It's a good thing. But I have to remind myself that a lot, where I'm like, oh no, I'm making the things I want to make versus someone else's things. It's just hard to motivate yourself sometimes because
nobody's up your ass, right?
Yeah, exactly.
It's your thing.
Yeah,
I can totally appreciate that. The last time I think we were kind of trying to get together was you did 2 days at Winnipeg Pro Wrestling. Is that?
Yeah, I think I came right before.
We don't have to talk about this.
It's fine. I think I came right before we went to camera, like a week.
Yeah. Because then it was like, you're done.
I think there was like a window or something where I had like 2 weeks before we went. But we shot a scene. There's a scene where the main character enters an amateur wrestling match. So we actually put on a wrestling event with Winnipeg Pro Wrestling.
Oh, wow.
So we had like 200-300 people at the West End Cultural Center here in Winnipeg. They actually did a show, like an actual wrestling show, and then we took the stage for like an hour, and we had the crowd just stuck around, and we filmed with the crowd, and they loved it. The crowd was the best crowd, because wrestling fans are very dedicated, and they stick around. They
hard
chant.
In the paint.
Yeah, and I kind of like was like, I had the microphone and was talking to the crowd, and in between I was doing like stand-up bits and jokes and stuff. It was really fun, and then And we had one of the supporting characters is a former WWF championship. The Maharaja Raj. So he's.
Why do you think I'm asking him about this?
I'm enjoying this.
He left. He left WWF about a year ago.
Okay.
And when I sent him, like, when our, you know, casting person sent him the script, he thought I wrote the part specifically for him. And I was like, no, it was just like, you kind of fit and looked right. And he's like, oh, sweet. And he said yes. And so he actually, and WPW, Winnipeg Pro Wrestling, were so happy to help us because they connected with him.
Mm-hmm.
And so now he's coming back to Winnipeg this Saturday to do another show with them and do like a wrestling match. So he got me free tickets. So I'm going to go on Saturday.
Is that the one at the, it was one at the museum.
That's the one. They're doing another one.
They're doing another one at the museum.
And Raj is flying in for it. So,
So wrestling in the museum.
Which museum?
Man of Nature.
Yeah. They do a wrestling there.
Where? By the boat?
The event room.
And the
where they had the weddings.
Okay. Basically, and where they have like fringe shows and stuff.
I know it doesn't seem big enough, but it's big enough.
Okay.
Yeah.
This I gotta see.
Yeah, dude.
He was like, yeah, come. And I'm like, what do we say? Are we like with wrestling or are we?
Yeah. I was like, yeah.
How do we get into this thing? The password is Strong Son.
Yeah. But like, that was a thing. Like, they sold tickets because there was an event, but it was like $10. And then like, for the most part, they were like, because when they broke even, they were just like, let's just like just give a password at the door so people I just told everyone just come
strong
say
son,
strong son walk in. I can't remember
we were gonna come and you have no you have no idea how hard it was to find parking. We drove around for 20 minutes and then I'm like,
so
we just went to go eat.
All good, like, honestly.
Like, I don't think Ian cares, he's not gonna be focused. Like,
it was that thing where it was like there was people there that I'm like, oh, you can't, like, you know, because I was just posted about it and people showed up, and it was great. It was too many people in some respect, but in a great, good way. It was just
It looked awesome. The shots the next day looked really fucking good.
So,
and keep Strong Son on your radar, listener. It's like an accumulate. Like, Strong Son was the start, but like, you've done four.
I've done essentially three shorts that are part of the feature. Like, they were, you know, accumulated into. This is kind of the sad dad, the end of the sad dad trilogy, I guess. I keep calling it. I don't know.
I'm really good at it, though.
I'm so happy.
There was a genre, sad dad.
Yeah, it's just like, you know, it's a thing. Making a movie,
you're gonna make a superhero movie
hard.
Next.
It's that thing. Like, what do you make next? And that's kind of the issue. Like, halfway, like right before going into camera, I was like, okay, what's, like, I made a list on my phone of like, okay, here's the next six projects. I got to pick which one I want to focus my energy on, because once you're finished a feature, you gotta like move on to the next. Like, you, people are gonna ask, what do you have next?
Right.
So I gotta start writing immediately, and I gotta start figuring out money and stuff right away, and like, you know, hustling the private investors again and do the same runarounds I've been doing already. So it's a world. It's
I can't imagine.
No, it's awful. Don't do it to yourself.
Watch out, kids. If you really want to be a filmmaker, here's the other side.
If you really want to be a filmmaker, go to law school. If you really want to be a filmmaker, become a doctor. These are my advice.
And this is exactly, he was going down that path.
Yeah.
And then became, he was a lawyer?
Lawyer.
He was going to be a lawyer, and then he became a filmmaker.
Yeah. And look how
I got when I interviewed him the first time. These were all. I was like, really? And I mean, anybody who wants to be a lawyer, their family is usually either they're either related to somebody who's been a lawyer, or they understand that that is a kick-ass job later on down the road. Like, so when you say goodbye, I imagine, to being a lawyer, your parents aren't like, great, good job.
But then you know, and this is all other conversation. But like the aspect of what is happiness, like where I think a lot of having immigrant parents. The money in their head, like money equaled happiness, which is, I don't believe, has ever been my thought. Though I do have realized
their perspective, money equaled happiness.
But money, you know, sure, these days money not bad. Everyone could use some. So,
speaking of money, we'd love it if you paid for one of our events, listener, which the next one is April 26th. Tickets are in the show notes. You can just stop listening to me right now, because if you've been to a Real Debaters Trivia Night, you know, they're lots of fun. Like the first one we did where I was like, all eight of us need to be there.
Yeah.
I mean, learning experience, right? Like, you don't need eight people to ask 40 questions, but it's fun to do. Everybody gets five questions. Make it fucking count. But yeah, we're doing another trivia night, and these have only been getting better and more fun and getting more packed. The last time we were at Little Brown Jug, we sold out. There was 70 of you there for Seinfeld trivia. It was like, we were in the...
Oh, no, I have friends who go to it. Like, I know people who are going.
Yes,
like,
you do.
Like, I know tons of people that go to it now. Like, the first time we did it, like, one of my, like, producer bosses were there, and I was like,
Farpoint's been coming to everyone.
Oh, really?
They're
Funny. Nice. That's like, really good.
It's, and I always shout them out. I'm like, you don't know who makes great shit. You've probably watched stuff they've made. Farpoint.
That's really funny.
Yeah, and
that's
they're like in the top four almost every time.
Oh, that's hilarious. That's good. So, that's good. I people love trivia. I'm going to say the city, but just in general, people love it. So that's great.
We have incorporated now, Charles figured out that It's Always Sunny, that coloring contests are fun. And Pam, if you know anything about The Office, which is our next trivia night, you know that Pam was a big proponent of art.
There it is. Mm-hmm.
So we're incorporating, we might find some of Pam's
artwork
that you have to color at the trivia.
Oh my god, that's genius.
And at the end of the night, there might be a jello mold with a stapler that you have to find your way through or out of. There's gonna be a we like props, we like cheap props and we like coloring because it's cheap.
Oh my god, that's genius to put the jello to the like
right.
What I don't even want to. I feel like I'm like, oh my god, that's genius. I'm like, I don't want to give ideas and spoil it, but I'm like, yeah, it's like how to get it out.
Yeah. Okay. Like get it out without getting it out. We're gonna fuck with people.
That's amazing.
That's why we call it Trivia Plus. It's plus other dumb shit, right?
can I ask, like, what are tickets?
$10.
That's insane. That's like so good of a deal.
So Little Brown Jug, $10, April 26th, 7:30 PM, over 40 questions, bonus questions included. I'm going to tell you right now, you should probably be aware of the UK office just as much as normal office.
I was going to ask you that. Is it to focus on the American version? Or
we're going to be doing maybe seasons 1 to 3, the first round, 3 to 6, 7 to 9.
That's
so
a good
on
idea.
And forth.
Yeah. 22 episode seasons. Like, yeah, there's
so much, right? And it's that old method of television making for procedurals, so you better come correct.
Also, how about the new Australian one that came out?
Right? Yeah, I heard about this. Yeah.
It's an Australian version
on Amazon Prime. Okay. I watched maybe one episode or a half in the first episode.
How is it?
Oh, awful. It's so cringe.
Shit.
Yeah. It's like I started watching, I've watched a few episodes of that medical show that's like a mockumentary on Crave.
Mockumentary?
The Pit.
We'll come to because I love The Pit.
Okay. You're a pitter?
I'm a pitter. But it's med something. Anyways, it's on Crave. It's on HBO Max. It's also very very office style, and it's a comedy. But it's also cringe, but that's at least watchable cringe. This one is bad. But you should watch it.
Just to make fun of it.
Yeah.
Australian Survivor I hear is great. This, I mean, also great for being shit. Buy your ticket. We can pack 70 people in there. So if you want to bring a couple friends, if you're going on a date. It's like 7:30 to 9:30. It's a great way to start a Saturday night. It's cheap. It's fun. You're going to walk away with a gift certificate. We always give a gift certificate to the winners to go to the movies. We send you to Landmark because we appreciate a reclining chair and privacy separators, places to put cheeseburgers, all these things. So that's, and then Little Brown Jug throws in a prize too. We've got dates all the way to like the end of the summer.
That's
like,
crazy.
They gave us like 5 or 6 dates. So we're once a month there. We're looking at other places now too. I don't want to say who they are because if I do and then it doesn't happen, then I look like a fucking idiot. So that being said, if you want to know more about trivia, subscribe to the podcast, subscribe to our social media, which is also in the show notes, and just buy yourself a ticket when you see it pop up, right? And no one else, I'm telling you right now, I know this, I've looked around. No one else is making fun fandom-based trivia in town. Yeah, there's your standard trivia.
Yep.
Yeah, someone might do like a Britney Spears night.
Yep.
Or, you know, like a 90s night. And those are great. Those are fun. Those are awesome. Go to those. But if you're a cinephile, if you're a fan of movies, if you like cracking weird jokes, if you like listening to podcasts, this is a little bit of both. Last one we all went to, I fell through a chair. I pratfell.
This was planned.
No, it wasn't.
Oh, okay.
I was asking a question, and I sat down on what I thought was a little chair, but apparently a little chair and a stool, I have a hard time differentiating between. So I fell through it. And then I almost thought I sat on the nails that popped out of the chair.
Right.
And I lied down in front of some guy. Like, some guy's crotch was right there. I was looking up. It was everyone laughed. I'm glad. So I might fall again. I might not. I don't know. April 26th, buy your tickets. That's all we're saying. We're done shamelessly plugging ourselves. Tony, what'd you watch this week?
I have to say I fell into the trap. I had to watch The White Lotus.
I thought you were going to see What's Trap.
No.
Which is a trap in and of itself.
Yes. Yeah. I watched The White Lotus and also the show that you and I and your lovely wife.
Some Jackets of Yellow?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, yes. You're a Yellow Jacketer.
Yeah. Okay, so White Lotus. Did you watch White?
I am caught up, and yes, I watched it.
What did we think of the finale? Let's all...
Season 3. Spoilers? Can we say spoilers?
We can. Okay. We're a week out.
Okay.
Yeah.
We're a week over.
I thought it was... I think we're getting used to them having this formulaic way of trying to coax us in for the whole time. I don't know if it was... really funny like season 2 was, but I
season toony season toony
season toony
season toony
the loony the toony
season 2 was hilarious.
Yeah, and I think, you know, certain characters helped to propel that. This one was good. It was enjoyable. It was a great way to spend my, you know, Sunday nights just clicking through it, watching it over. But I don't know if I got overly involved in the incest controversy that everyone...
You're not into incest?
You don't like a Schwarzenegger kissing his brother?
They didn't kiss, okay?
No, okay. I'm downplaying it for those who haven't seen it. You don't like a Schwarzenegger jerking off his brother?
Well, technically
this is the other brother.
Okay, let's get out of the weeds here.
Yeah, like, but... You know, because the way they were making it sound, like when they were dropping it through all the promotions, that episode 4 and 5 is going to blow your mind. And it was,
it was the best episode, though, of the season. Like, I do think, like, think it was, like, it was at least the most fun, that episode. I remember watching it and texting a friend, being like, have you watched that episode yet? It finally got good. Like, that was literally the thing I said. Because it was felt like this one felt like such a slow burn.
Yeah.
Oh, totally.
Till that episode 4. And then you're like, oh, okay, this is what this is going to be about, is this awkward tension. But the show didn't even do much with it in the end. Yeah, you know?
The incest, it didn't do much. You look at each season. The first season is about greed, I would say.
Okay.
Interesting. Yeah, yeah.
Like, its base theme is, you know, if you want to...
Well, yeah, because it was supposed to be one and done, too, that one. So it's, like, very encompassing.
HBO was like, can you do more of this? And then he's like, well, all right, formulaic, as you say. Season 2 was about toxic masculinity, at its core, I think, and sexuality, and I would imagine, what's the word I'm looking for?
What would you say this one is?
Then? Yeah,
I have been told that this one was all about classism. If you look at it through...
I'd have to really think. But it sounds right, everything you're saying. I just have to think.
Like,
about
if you look at the
season.
Relationship between the two employees, she's about his status in life.
Okay,
so if you look at Parker's perspective on, you know, Popper, no, you can't live in a Buddhist colony. Okay.
That's
a bad
that's
impression.
Pretty good. That's
very close.
Pretty good.
It was really good.
Yeah, it's not bad.
Better than my walking. But, like, she's so about status, right?
Okay.
And then the dad is about status.
Yep.
And the brother's about status. And then you've got money and age and wealth with Gary and his younger wife, right?
Okay.
So it's all about where you're positioned in life. And these are like, noticeable themes. They're not the theme,
correct?
Right? They're not the story, but it's just the things that he's been peppering in. That's just my take on it.
I think it's actually pretty on point.
Yeah, I think now that you've said it that way and looking through the lens, I can see it, yeah. Because really at the end, not spoiler alert to anyone who has, our friend who is, you know, came over and was supposed to be learning the trade through the hotel, I'm blanking on her name at the moment.
The
moment she gets the money, she's all about ditching her friend. Because
you caught that,
She
did exactly what
dumped by to her. So, you know, and had no problem selling out because she saw that this is her ticket
The life fell out of Porn Chai's eyes, right? I can't forget that name.
Yeah,
Porn Chai is such a great name. But like you just see him be like, oh, my dream is gone. And I'm like, I know that face. That face was in season 1. You were wearing it, bitch. Like, oh God, that was hard to watch. Did we like the death? Did we?
I feel like I saw it coming for the most part. There's a coming joke somewhere in there between incests. But like otherwise, no. I think overall, I think part of like when you look at season 1, season 2, season 3, season 1 was like 6 episodes, season 2 was 7, season 8 or sorry, season three had 8 episodes. It was.
Do we think 4 will have 9?
Is
there a trend here?
It just felt like it was too long. Like, I feel like they could have done everything in 6. That, like, in the end, I was like, yeah, I think I see where this is going. Yeah. I think these two are probably going to die. It'd probably be 2 people maybe this time. Like, it just felt like it was being set up for so too long. It was fine. I thought the fake out. I think I actually kind of wish the son did die because everyone would have been mad. You know. Everyone would have been, because I got pissed. I'm like, is he actually going to die? Oh my God, is it 3 people are going to die? That's a lot of people. Lotus cannot exist after this. Like this.
If you follow all the chatter on it, all of foretelling is telling you it had to be 3 people, right? Because the whole way through, you're told that evil or bad things come in threes, right?
Yes.
And so
that's true.
It was said the whole way. And actually, someone did a breakdown, so kudos to them, because usually the opening titles give
their clues.
They're clues, right? Yeah. So you see whose name is positioned by which creature or which picture, right? And it's supposed to give you a clue what's coming. So they were kind of leading you down the primrose path of there's 3. I just thought, to your point of it being long, like the 3 sisters or the 3 best friends, for me, was just
the weakest
part. I have no idea.
It felt pushed in.
Yeah.
It like, didn't feel like it fit.
Well, I feel like it should have tied up between the guy that worked at the White Lotus who was who ended up being one of the robbers.
Yes.
I felt like
Russian, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It felt like he that connection between them should have tied into
somehow
a chaos. Like, I remember watching season 2, and I'll say season 1 I don't remember much. I watched it during COVID and it was a time of my life. But season 2 I remember watching and feeling stressed like throughout every episode. Like, it was like such a soap opera of like, what's going to happen now?
Well, you really get involved in the relationship between the dad and the son, and him getting, even you don't even meet the wife, and you're like, you're rooting for him, right? Like, is he going to be porn dad? Is he going to be good dad? Like, what's going to happen there? Then the son and his relationship with what's her face's assistant. Like, there's just a lot of tension.
There was a lot of interaction between other like different groups. Like, they all kind of like interacted a lot more, I felt. This one didn't do that as much.
No, and your introduction of Gary, you're thinking, okay, it's supposed to build. So you see clips that or signs that he was involved in his wife's killing.
Yeah, yeah.
You brought this whole staff person over who she's frightened all of
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah.
And the whole takeaway is he just wants to watch his wife have sex with a stranger. That's my takeaway from all of this.
And he can afford like $5 million to buy off someone, even
it's indecent exposure.
Yes.
Well, but it's interesting.
Decent proposal. Thank you.
it's interesting. Like I was saying this to a friend. He clearly has. I'm assuming he has guilt.
Yes.
Which is why he gives the $5 million. Yet we didn't really see much of that guilt on him.
No.
Like
no.
We just assume he has that because he gave $5 million to a person.
Well, you kind of assume that he wanted to invite the family over to the party because he either wanted to attack the 2 brothers for having sex with his wife.
Right.
Yeah.
It just seemed like there's so many build up, and then
nothing.
The air just gets let out of a balloon.
Agreed.
Slowly.
Agreed.
Like, you have the Russians stealing from the site. You actually have them trying to eventually get found out that you are the people, and then it goes
nowhere. Yeah.
None. Like, because at the end, we see the Russian basically waving goodbye. So obviously the bodyguard has not turned you in. And we now know he's compromised his Buddhist values. He will kill you.
Yeah.
Everything for nothing for a smoke screen to take you away from who was going to get killed.
It almost feels like that episode, the final episode should have been episode 6. Mm. And then the son should have died in episode 8 or something, you know?
I wanted the son to die because I wanted the family to learn a lesson. But I wanted him to die by drinking, not by the milk is spoiled. I didn't like that. That whole thing was just to create tension. I'm like, there's no way he's going to kill his family. There's no way.
Agreed.
Duke has already been mad enough that he was doing weird shit in a Duke t-shirt without his family involved.
Right.
There's no way they're going to push this to the level where it's now a dude kills his family members because he's embezzling back home in Thailand. Like, that just takes too much away.
Yeah. And
it was a red herring is what I'm getting at, right? Like, it pulled my attention because I'm like, no, it
was too big of a move.
Yeah. It was almost as big as his fucking dick hanging out. Like,
oh, that was funny.
That was so funny.
But at least they had the best, I found, arch of their learning capacity.
They were the best.
Because, once again, to the wonderful crafty people who go online and figure these things out, like on the opening scene where the family's coming across in the boat, you see the 3 children sitting together,
this
and they call them the 3 monkeys, right? It's see no evil, hear no evil, speak no evil.
Hands, eyes, mouth.
Right? And the going home, they're actually, the brothers are reversed
yep.
in how they've now looked at the world. And so each one of them has gone through a bit of a metamorphosis. The
yep.
daughter has now realized she is a princess.
And yeah, need air conditioning.
And probably will fail once she gets home and money's gone.
Yeah.
The oldest son is trying to become a better person. And the one who sees God, that one is, I think, you don't know where that's really going to go. I think he's lost.
He's just, he's young and influential, I think.
You just hope when he goes home, he will give up trying to be a people pleaser by giving his family.
Right. When he says that line, I'm a people pleaser, so I just wanted to make, you're always thinking
well,
about
like,
sex.
Yeah.
There's a line, bud.
And then it's like, well, he's like, I'm in a family full of narcissists or something.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like that, which I thought was like, that's an interesting, like, aspect for whatever 19-year-old
he speaks
to
finally
see.
And has a perspective.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I think in my head, like, the thing he'll take away when he goes home is just, like, I think it was, I don't think he'll take away much. I think, like, his innocence is kind of gone now.
Yes.
So I don't know what he'll, like, I think that was it. Like, we almost killed his innocence in this.
Yeah, I agree with that. Okay. Before we move on, we can't talk about this without talking about the monologue.
The Sam Rockwell?
The Sam Rockwell right. monologue.
Once again, like I, you wrote that.
You don't want to be an Asian woman getting banged by a fucking dude in Thailand? I did after that monologue.
I just love the guy sitting across from him. And he's like,
Goggins.
Walter Goggins, yeah.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Sure.
Sure. And you're sober when you're telling me this, right?
Yeah, yeah.
That's
yeah.
the fun part. Yeah. So.
Well, I've been in one. Walter Goggins feels like he's in everything.
Walton.
Sorry.
Yeah,
sorry.
Walton.
Walton Goggins. Yeah. He's in everything, it seems. And
he's having a year.
I started watching Righteous Gemstones.
Yes.
And it's funny watching him, and I'm like on season 3 right now, but like watching him in that and then watching him in this where he's like completely an asshole. Like, he's kind of an asshole in both shows, and but like he's just like such a bitter guy in this.
Oh, he's broken and
he's such an interesting face, and just his reaction during the Sam Rockwell speech was just like
memes
so
the
funny.
Next day were fucking killer.
Yeah,
like everyone's like confused about how to interpret life. Walton Goggins' face.
Yes.
I want to talk to casting directors over the next 5 years and just see how many people walk in with the balls to do that monologue.
That's their monologue.
Yeah, yeah,
audition.
Yeah.
Right? Like when they start talking.
I'm trying to get into Juilliard and that's the monologue.
That's the
I
one
give.
You give. How many Walton Goggins goggle glasses, which is a real product endorsed by Walton. They are goggle sunglasses.
They do nothing. Simpsons, sorry. You don't know Simpsons.
Sorry, you're right, I don't. But they don't. They're non-prescription. But he has them. They're $150 a pair, and he's all over Instagram wearing Walton Goggins goggle glasses. Say that 5 times fast, but tell me, how many of those out of 5 do you give White Lotus?
This season, I give it 3.
Fair. I agree.
It kept my interest. Once again, I kept going back to the well. I wanted to see how this thing was going to get wrapped up. So
What's 2 and 1? Like, what season 1, what season 2, what would you...
I think season 2 for me would have been about 4 to 5, and season 1 about 4.5 for me.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I'd probably say 4.5 for season 2. I like season 2 a lot more than 1.
Not just because the gays were trying to kill her, which has to be downright one of the best lines in
it's
any
so
show.
Funny.
Which one?
These gays are trying
the
to
gays
kill
are
me.
Trying to
kill me.
Me.
And he's
so
like,
funny.
I also gay.
Yeah, it's so like that is a finale, you know? Like,
yes.
So
these
funny.
Gays are trying to kill me. It's going to be one of her best lines. What'd you watch? Fuck, I know what you watched. You watched everything I watched, probably.
Pick one thing.
Well, I'm going to talk about the thing I've been watching nonstop right now, which we referenced to a little bit earlier, but The Pitt.
Pitt.
A pitter.
Yes.
And I've never, and it's funny, I've never.
The other guys, I've told them about it, but I don't think they're going to watch it because I don't think the medical drama wasn't a thing for them.
It wasn't a thing for me. Like,
really?
I never watched ER. I remember, not that my mom was an avid TV watcher, but I remember her liking ER, and I thought that's an interesting, and it was a show that would be on in the background. I'd be like, oh yeah, things are happening. But now I get it. Like, I'm watching this, and it's something, I think it really helps my ADHD, because it's just going.
Yes.
It's a train, and you don't really like, and you know, they solve one patient, they move on, they go, it just goes. And you're kind of with
it's
certain
unforgiving
people. It's unfair. Yeah, like I can't even tell you what happened in one episode or another, because it just goes, and I love it, and it's truly holds my attention somehow. And lately, I think that's been like the hardest thing with TV for me is just finding holding my attention. Like movies, like I
long
settle
form
in.
Storytelling.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Movies, I'm better, but like with shows, but somehow this thing has cracked the code for me. I love it. I've never been a medical person. I'm Noah Wiley is the lead from ER. I think he's essentially playing the same character.
He's Carter.
He is so.
There's
good.
A lawsuit about how there close is, to Carter he is right
oh,
now.
Oh, it's great. Like he is, and all the even the aside characters or whatever the other yeah. doctors, all good. I don't know. I'm nearly done the entire season. Like I think there's one more episode.
Dude, it's tonight.
Yeah.
Is it tonight? Oh, even better. Oh, okay. Like I'm on episode 10 right now. I've just been literally in the last 2 days binging it. Like literally crack a drink and watching it. And I'm like,
are you caught up?
I'm caught up. Yeah.
Okay. You are in for a ride.
Oh, like I can.
Where are you? What's
the biggest thing that just happened the episode before? And I'm halfway through like episode I think 10. But like he discovered the good looking doctor was stealing pills.
Okay.
Oh yeah.
So like, and he like yells at him to get the fuck out, and he orders pizza. So that's literally where I'm at. So he's just ordering pizza. Hasn't come yet.
So more is still to come. So
Oh, I'm sure. It's one of those things like you know I don't know if you guys watched 24 ever.
Yes.
But when 24 was out.
Oh yeah.
It's like 24. The unbelievableness of a day mm-hmm. was there, but it was fun. And I'll say, like, as it got going, like further seasons, it got weaker and weaker because you're like, it's too unbelievable. This all happened in a day. There's something about this one.
That's
it
believable.
It's a little more believable, even though it's... Yeah. But, like, even he makes reference to it being, like, it's just one of those days. Like, I can't believe, like, how many people are dying today? Like, you know? And I'm like, yeah, maybe... And I've been told in the vlog world or TikTok, and so people have said, like, this is the closest to what possibly a hospital...
A lot of... Yeah, they get test screened in front of medical professionals. Mm-hmm. So nurses, paramedics, all that stuff.
I'm really happy you both are watching because it's definitely a show like I had no interest in watching. I heard some good things and I was just like, I need something. Like, I'll be honest, right? Just Gemstone was kind of burning me out. And I was like, I'm not really digging it as much. I'm going to take a break.
There's only so much absurdity you can take.
Yeah, like it wasn't hitting the... And I'll say, I don't think that show is very funny. It's just like more of a drama.
Well, it's Eastbound and Down humor,
and
right?
I'm not. What's his name?
Danny McBride.
I'm not a Danny
McBride. I know. I'm not either.
Yeah, I find him very annoying. But like, I think he's gifted. Like, I actually rewatched the Foot First Way, his very first film, and I was like, this is funny. This is good. It's like an indie, very indie film, and you know, it's hilarious. So, but like, you know, and the pit showed up on my door, and now I'm pitting hard.
Oh God, I can't. I got pits in my teeth. It's fucking. What do you think of it?
I concur wholeheartedly. What I like the most, I think, is. It shows you everything.
Yeah.
They're not
I had to do this in that one episode.
Yeah, well, it's just multiple times all over the place where the gentleman who urinates, they show that he has a penis. It's not just from a back angle.
This is medical. Yep. They have penises. Yep.
So a woman has to go into a tub to be revived. They just rip open her shirt. You see full breasts. Yep. So they're it's not a sanitized, you know, you from the times of St. Elsewhere Fire and all of that.
Yep.
Or Chicago Hope.
Chicago Hope. And all that.
So I'm appreciating that it's almost in your face.
Yep.
We all have bodies and all of this.
It's unforgiving, which is...
It's unflinching.
And to your 24 point, a show that takes you with them.
Yeah.
Almost with, like, there's a lot of one shots in it, right?
Yep.
There's a lot of swings and there's no cut to it. So you feel, and of all places, to feel that level. Like, every time I watch it, I'm like, this is what a doctor loves.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what makes me feel so uncomfortable right now. Like, to be in that room, they crave it. And they give you that insider look. Fluorescent lights and all. It's the worst lit show.
Yeah.
I mean, tell an actor, act under fluorescent lights. Are you fucking kidding me? Like,
no, Wiley looks 70.
He does look 70.
Oh, he
you
looks.
See the bags.
Yes.
You see
everything.
Everybody looks like shit, but it's like 8 hours into a ER shift. You shouldn't look like you got a pep in your step.
Well, I remember also when I used to be a big Scrubs person.
Okay.
Sure.
Yes.
I loved Scrubs. And actually, I had a phase in like high school where I was like, should I be a doctor? And I went through that phase in university.
Nah, lawyer.
It's easy. Yeah. Well, like, and I remember taking classes and being like, I think I like this. And I was like, no, I'm not smart enough for this. But I remember watching some behind the scenes about with Scrubs. And the costume designer was like, oh, we have to, like, you know, make our own types of Scrubs uniforms for the actors because we wanted them to look, like, good, you know? And so they had them kind of like designed a certain way.
Yeah.
So fitted in a way like you know, the women, like it hugs their butts a little bit more.
Yeah,
like essentially, yeah. Like, you know, it's
$200 scrubs, please.
But I would say, like, in this, like, you can tell, like, these are legitimate scrubs that are, yeah, like, you know, they're not.
Nobody is flattered in this.
No, it's not getting any.
How many pairs has Buddy lost so far where you're at?
Oh, I think he's like at four. Or something.
He's at four, yeah.
It was like blood, piss, blood.
Well,
you know,
okay, what we'll tell you is you have to go back to the start of the shift because it will end how it started, essentially.
Yeah.
There are callbacks to other patients who are still involved in the story.
I think one has already come back. Okay. I could be wrong, though. I think one came back, and it was the
Asian lady with her grandma or mom?
That has not come back yet, but no, the woman with the ankle monitor, she sent someone away, and then I think they just came back.
That's Brad Dourif's daughter.
What?
Oh.
Yeah.
Weird. Like, it's such a...
Who does,
like,
a cameo later on.
But I was going to say, like, there's been a few, like... I've only really, besides Noah Wiley, there's only been one other actor who's like briefly in it. I think like the fake mom of the daughter that wants an abortion.
Oh, okay.
Was the only other actress I've recognized. Yeah. Otherwise, like, I don't know any of these actors.
I've seen
the chief nurse has been in things before.
She has.
Yeah.
Oh, she's.
Yeah.
I love
yeah,
her.
Sure. Yeah.
And she's got that hard Pittsburgh accent too. The brown girl whose mom works in the hospital.
Yeah, she's
I've
in
seen
stuff.
Her in other
I,
stuff
yeah,
too.
Yeah, like I don't know what though. Like they found just the right amount. Like that's why it's perfectly helmed by Noah Wiley in this. Like, you know, like he's
well, it's also, John Wells. It's the same guy who did ER.
Oh, okay.
Sorry, go on.
No, I had no idea about any of this stuff. I just think. I in my headspace, I know Noah Wiley as ER. I don't know where the fuck he's been the last like 30 years.
He did two shows on TNT and some other network.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Been kind of
medical shows or no?
No. He's okay. Like he said.
No, he wanted out for
never. Never again. Give me a stethoscope. Fuck off.
Yeah.
But so they approached Stephanie Crichton, Michael Crichton's ex or not ex, widow, and asked her to. It was an ER revival at first.
Yep.
That was the attempt. And then,
which it basically is, right?
Well, and then
that's what the whole lawsuit's about, right?
Okay.
Because what they're arguing is because they approached, they wanted to relaunch this, so they were getting everywhere, and it just didn't go. So they're like, we still want to do a medical drama, and so they're arguing they went in a different direction, and now she's suing them, going, "No, you didn't."
She wants a created by credit.
Yeah.
So, and as someone who is, you know,
understands this.
I've seen like a few ER, or it's like not an ER fan, but I've seen a couple episodes, and you guys might know, like, is it close to ER? Is it very ER? Like, I'm assuming it is.
ER has a running story.
That's what I thought. Like, it was more the doctors, you saw them out.
It wasn't
of the
real time.
Mm-hmm.
ER had more.
It was more, the difference between it and Chicago Hope, as they always said, it believed it was more trauma than drama. And so it was always about the patient. So they were always trying to tell you, you know.
Where Grey's Anatomy's baby mama drama?
but like you left the ER with the doctor sometimes. Like you saw
you
her home.
You went home. You got out.
And I think that's the biggest difference because I love that we don't.
Doctors, I mean, it was the start of doctors sleeping in outpatient facilities.
Yeah. Right.
And like they did that, but they didn't focus on it as much as everyone fucks on Grays, right?
Right.
And
correct.
It was trying to be as medically accurate as possible. And for the time, I mean, you have everything. You have your shootings. You have your mass casualties.
Yeah.
Like you have all of the scenarios because you just open up the book of medical issues and say, pick one and write a story around that.
Is Gray still on?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
Crazy. I watched the first two seasons a lot when they
were approaching soap territory now.
And for me, this is where like the pit has come out of the gate blazing. It's doing really well, but this is it. Like, no, you are a 5-year at best show.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Because that's the problem with Grey's Anatomy. Now we are, there's only so many times you can blow up the emergency room or have a chopper crash on the top of the hospital or have the seventh doctor die and be in a coma.
That's what 911 is for.
You know, so this is what
I fucking love.
I'm loving that it's like one shift, it's a multiple hours.
Give me 7 years, a week in this ER. We're done.
My God.
Exactly. And it's like, I'm going with five seasons, and that's
it. 5 days, Monday to Friday.
I don't want to know you guys are all dating. I don't want to know about your children. I don't want to just show me that this kind of thing. But sooner or later, they're going to have someone come into the ER with a gun and do a shootout. And then, or there's going to be an explosion. And
love it's triangle.
Just, it's just going to jump this shark.
Yep. No, I agree.
I know what studio executives are capable of. I'm watching the studio.
As well. I'm on episode 4. Is that the one that's out?
I missed last night, but I know what happened.
Yep.
Every time I know what happened, Boss Logic releases a new poster from whatever movie is in that episode.
Oh, funny.
So there's a Kool-Aid poster out there that's like Scorsese's last movie.
Yeah, yeah.
And then there's Alphabet City one.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah.
Mackie, and now there's
the motel side.
The motel side. So like those are enjoyable, but it needs to know its value and stop, because I can totally see a studio being like, churn out more, baby. This is a money maker, baby.
Noah Wiley is an EP on it, so I'm hoping he like...
He's right. He's got the control.
He wrote an episode, I believe.
He directed one, too.
He directed one as well. Okay, I saw his name came up during the...
And he's like a huge advocate for like healthcare professionals, like doing what he did for so long.
Yeah.
You can't, like, if you want to study what your character does when you get to study a job... Like being a doctor, I think you get a little bit more than like Keanu Reeves with a gun being a hitman.
Do you guys feel like you're learning when you watch it? I don't, but I feel like I am.
I like to sit there and see if I because I watched ER. I watched me and my mom ER. I think it was Thursday at eight. Back when Thursday night television was a thing.
Yeah, yeah. Must see TV.
Yeah.
Friends to whatever, and then ER at eight. Yeah.
I really like to test myself and be like, what does that mean? What's that short for, right? Do I, like, I leaned over to Shauna once and I was like, they're going to have a mass cash. And she's like, shut up. Like, what? I can't say it. How many?
Noah Wiley's.
Yeah.
Yeah. How many Carters? Because it's Carter.
It's like, Carter.
It's Carter.
Pittsburgh Burgers. out of five, out of ten. Out of five, probably right now, I'm like, you know, it might, like you guys, like you said, like it might be like the 1 year, like freshman, whatever, like it might suffer later. But right now, it's like a 4 out of 5 right now.
I agree.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Next season is 10 months later, starts on July 4th. So July 4th weekend in Pittsburgh. 10 months after the last episode.
I don't know if you're being sincere right now.
I'm being 100% sincere. Really? It's been greenlit for season 2.
Crazy. Okay. Oh, cool. Okay, that's really cool. Okay.
You are going to love the episode coming up just about vaccination.
Yeah.
It's one of my favorite moments in this entire season.
Yeah.
Put Dr. fucking Google away! And also, there's hot points. He's right. Like, there's some modern day hot points. There's assault. If you haven't already seen assault of a healthcare worker.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, that happened with she got punched. I'm assuming because that guy was like focused on so much. Like the filmmaker brain comes up and where I'm like, okay, like he's been shown up too many times. He definitely, like, we saw him walk away. He's going to come back. Like, you know, they're looking for him. And I'm excited to see where that thread goes. It's such an interesting concept. Like, it's doing everything what a TV show does. Mm-hmm. It just, there's so many storylines that are happening that you have to like that. I think that's where the ADHD focus is in, because if you miss it, even if you miss a little, it's easy to jump back in. Like, I can walk away to get a drink and come back. Yeah, and I'm like, I feel like I'm like, I didn't really miss much. You can easily understand.
Well,
what's
point
going
is
on.
To revisit, right?
Yeah.
Go do blood work.
Yeah.
Yes.
Get some tests done. Come back. Experience what it's like to be asking for a constant update or what it's like after somebody dies. And they have to make a decision with the body. Like, all of those things get a little bit more real time.
And it's not wrapped up in a nice bow.
It's not, right? No. Like, at the end of an episode, you're like, okay, so those people are still suffering.
Yeah.
And she's still in pain. And that's a problem. And none of it got closure.
And I think one thing I enjoy doing just in life is I like people watching. I like going to cafes and people watching. And you know, even, like, the times I'm waiting at an airport or something, I love just zoning out and people watching and just seeing. And I've done, you know, not that I go to hospital. The times I'm waiting in a hospital, I'm just people.
Just people watching.
But that's what we're doing in a weird way.
Yeah,
like,
it's
that. Because we're just, and then, like, they walk away.
It's rubbernecking, right?
Yeah, yeah. They walk away, and then new people are talking about something, and you're like, oh, that's interesting.
You want to know a little tidbit? I'm all about trivia now on the show, right?
Because
we host trivia, so I'm like, might as well show off our skills.
Connection.
No cell phones were allowed on set, so very Christopher Nolan, right? Because the thing is with this, everybody was needed at all times, because your scene might be you're not the primary.
Mm-hmm.
You're in the background.
Yeah.
Because they didn't want to have these cuts where it removed what was just being done. It took away from the real aspect of like, well, that's still happening over there.
Yeah.
So we should probably keep that in the shot, right? So
right.
It gives you a sense of real time,
right?
Instead of the cut to the new shot to the new room, you're like, well, that must be over with because that's what the brain goes. So no cell phones, right? Always be ready. There's a pregnancy episode coming.
Mm-hmm. There was a baby born already.
Oh, so you've seen the baby.
I've seen the baby. I've seen the baby. The baby just came out of the V. I saw it all.
Yeah, my lunch almost came out.
I don't get grossed out by things easily. So
I
like,
have mad respect for women after seeing that.
Like, I do. Well,
in my
friend
head,
just...
I never knew what it was like. Besides Fair, grade 9 science,
I'm
right?
assuming we still don't know what it's like.
Oh, very okay. I'm not saying I have a better
have
idea.
Have you seen
Hang on here.
Thank you. I have juniored.
Thank you. I still don't know. I have a physical representation.
Yeah.
But they had a library. They had a community library. And apparently Noah donated like a ton of books to start it up. In the pregnancy episode, she carried the entire series of Harry Potter in her fake pregnancy belly.
That's hilarious.
And would reach out and give someone a book whenever they needed
that's
it.
That's great trivia.
Oh, wow.
That's a true story.
That's a great trivia. One last thing I was going to say. It's just because my friend was, they just had a baby, so they're watching a lot of like things right now.
TLC.
That was like, kind of off topic. We were talking about adolescence today because I told him to watch adolescence.
Yes. You got time.
And not to dive into adolescence, but you know what? With adolescence, there are one takes each episode, mm-hmm. and I keep watching the pit, going, I wonder if this could have done that. You know, like I'm like, could they have? Like it would be
one shot.
A lot of work. One shot for each episode, like because it's kind of doing that already. But there's cuts, and I think
cuts from interior to exterior. For
yeah,
sure.
and I do think like for this to keep it going, you can't like,
production
you could,
wise, it gets to a point.
Well, it's just also like honestly, like if you rewatch Adolescence or rewatch an episode, you do see
I've caught a few.
Yeah, you see the gray areas where they're like, now it's a transitional time,
or there is a small mistake, like someone walks into a wall.
Totally, yeah.
And they're meant to go through the door frame, but they bump it a bit, like, that's worth it. Like,
sure,
that could happen. Fine.
Yep. So like, it's been funny because it feels truthful to the hour. So I'm like, oh, could have done. I think the studio did a one take. That's very good. But anyways, that's all.
There's
off topic.
A new. What are they wanting to do? That same studio is doing a new story. I just read about it this week. They're taking some famous story and wanting to do it instead of this. They're taking like a real event and possibly or an event inspired by a show inspired by a real event instead of this just being inspired by toxic masculinity and,
right.
Oh, okay.
And internet culture and all that stuff. I'll tell you later what it is. You want to know what I watched?
Yes.
The Pit.
It Ends With Us.
Like the show,
it ends with us.
Oh, sorry. Oh, the Blake Lively
Baldoni movie.
Yes.
Yeah.
I heard This Is Us.
No. Like, not the sad ass show about the family.
That's why my face is looking like this. You watched It Ends With Us,
start to finish.
So I did start it and I couldn't watch it. Yeah. I watched 5 minutes.
I almost stopped. Do you want to know why I continued?
Because
you
of the drama.
You wanted to know.
No.
Oh.
There's only one reason I continued. It is because of a very handsome man named Brendan Skellner, I think is how you pronounce his name. Also the lead in 1923.
Okay.
He's a fucking handsome dude. I cannot keep... Me and Shauna, when we watch 1923, we look at each other and I'm like, I get it. He's fucking handsome. Like, he is the kind of man that saves you. He's on the cover of romance novels. It's like Romancing Stone.
Is he
the chef. Did you get to the chef part?
Yeah, I did, yeah.
He's the chef.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
So...
The other guy.
He's the other guy from her childhood. So it's a great... idea mm-hmm. on trying to talk about domestic violence, and
right.
it's a cool way they did it. It's just shitty movie. So
and Jenny Slate's in it.
Jenny Slate's in it,
which is really weird.
And who's the comedian that's in it? She plays her husband.
I don't remember.
He got called out for having fake stand up.
That's many people.
Okay, yeah, you're right.
Dane Cook.
I'll close that in later. But okay, so the story is Lily Bloom, right? Well, runs a florist shop. Ironically, you go back and forth between her young life and being exposed to potential domestic violence because her dad's a kind of a dick. He's the mayor of the small town. And she meets this rough and rugged kid who one day they form a bond and end up having a relationship. And then they end up being each other's first. So it's her first childhood love. Fast forward to today. She's opening her florist shop. She's having a bad day. She goes on the top of a roof and meets Justin Baldoni, the neurosurgeon. Right.
Been there, right?
Whoever, yeah. You always meet a doctor.
I'm always, always looking for a hot doctor.
But he comes in hot, guys. He comes in kicking chairs and punching shit. So immediately you're like, this is how this guy solves his problems, right? So they form a bond. Next thing you know, they're like, we probably shouldn't be together. A year goes by. She opens her florist shop. Jenny Slate gets hired. It just so happens that her brother is Justin Baldoni's character. So now Lily has hired her new flower shop friend and is back in Justin Baldoni's life.
Okay.
At this point, they start to form a relationship. Love is blossoming. It's intense. It's all these great things. Cut to the first incident where they drop a pan that's hot on the stove on the ground.
I saw this.
Right? And then he picks it up, burns his hand, accidentally hits her. Right? They wake up. She's got a black eye. He's got a fucked up hand. It looks bad. Mm-hmm. Right? Their relationship starts to bloom. Next thing you know, they go to this restaurant, and she realizes that Atlas, the love of her life from her teenage years, is now a chef. He always loved food. He always loved culture. And they run into each other. Now you have a love triangle.
Okay.
It's still incredibly shitty. It's full of over-the-top love. It's full of love bombing. And all of these things in the story play well, but the characters, Blake's horrible. Baldoni is just a cheese dick. Jenny Slate is too over the top. Like, if I didn't know what had gone on in this movie behind the scenes, I would have given it a lot more love. I would have been a little bit more kind with it. But watching the bullshit back and forth between the two of them, I'm like, it's ruining it for me, because now I'm trying to pick out where you were a dick to her,
right,
and where she boycotted your, co-opted your film and took it over, right? Like, you can't get into it. So if anybody wants to watch it, I'm telling you right now, it will fuck you up. You can't get into it.
Just as a refresher,
questions.
So what's the drama outside? She was shitty to him. He was shitty. Like, I don't remember the drama. I did at some point know it.
It started with him hiring. He said he was going to hire her something to do with...
Oh, an intimacy coach?
He was going to hire an intimacy coordinator, then ended up being a fitness coach because he thought that she was overweight.
Is he a director as well?
He's a director,
producer, and performer on it. Yeah,
he's triple threat. Then he was charged with the producer and him being incredibly overtly sexual on set, showing pictures. The producer was showing pictures of his naked wife. He walked in on her while she was pumping. Like, it's just a back and forth litany of sexual assault charges, awkward time on set, her manipulating the movie, wanting to change to her final cut instead of his final cut, basically using Taylor Swift and her husband to bully him into submission.
I do a little bit of that.
It's just a litany of.
And then there was stuff where I think there's texts from her. He was like, I got a lot of stuff on you, and he just posted
one day.
In
the end, though, what's cool about the movie is after the first moment of intimacy partner violence, right, it happens again. Mm-hmm. And this time it happens in a stairway where she falls down the stairs. And then it happens a third time when he realizes that she's still been in communication with Atlas after they ran into each other. And you can tell that he doesn't have the life skills to deal with this and turns into a 9-year-old boy who wants to pout and scream and hit shit, right? So by the last violent scene, which is him trying to rape her because he doesn't feel that she is loved enough, so now he's going to show her, I love you. She leaves, runs to Atlas, happily ever after, they end up with each other, blah, blah, blah. But what's interesting is that each scene is shown through her eyes, where a victim of violence would justify staying with somebody. They would tell their friends and their family everything's okay. But in the end of the movie, when she has her moment of realization that due to her childhood of domestic violence with her parents, she has been blocking out what really happened the entire time. They replay all three acts.
Okay.
And now you see it's coming from a violent perspective. He's beating her. He pushed her down the stairs. He's trying to rape her, and she has a moment of self-realization.
So that's the end.
It ends with us. It ends here. It ends with the two of us leaving.
So he did hit her. Not the kitchen thing wasn't real.
The kitchen thing wasn't real until the replay at the end of the film, when she has her herself her moment of self-realization.
And what did happen? Did he just hits her?
What happens is that he just ends up being the guy who hits women.
Mm,
he's just an abuser, right?
He's
a neurosurgeon. He's kind of arrogant. He's just a douche.
Right.
Is really what he is, and she doesn't see it. And you see it from the first moment he comes on screen.
Right.
How he deals with a bad day is he kicks a chair off of the roof of his building. And then you're battling between your thoughts of like, no, he hit her. Like you saw it, you see it on screen. You're like, he hit her. But the way they play it in the story is it was just next.
Life of Pi did it better.
Right. Yeah. Richard Parker. But so, I mean, like the aspects, the storytelling, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
That was cool. I thought that was,
it's a good concept.
Yeah.
It's
just shitty that it happened to this Colleen Hoover novel.
Yeah.
That was so hotly debated. It's fucking separated people's opinions on like what Hollywood is and isn't.
Yeah.
Everybody's just an elitist prick fighting and, you know, what's to believe. Take a side for Baldoni, you're an asshole against, you know, sexual assault survivors. You take a side for Blake, and then, you know, you're the things they're calling Blake online. My mother would slap me if I said, like, It's you just can't enjoy the movie because of the shit that happened. I just wish that movie had been done by other people. I think it would have. I'd give it more than a 2 if it had other cast and this shit hadn't gotten in the way, because it's a cool concept. So if you're interested in watching it, I probably spoiled too much of it, but it's unfortunate.
Yeah, it's unfortunate.
What I'm
a the message that it could have gotten across,
yeah,
is lost because everyone's yelling
the
about
argument.
The crap.
Like, this is Baldoni's cut, I believe.
Yeah.
We'll never know, but this is a story he wanted to tell. Where she wanted to tell it more from her perspective of surviving it,
mm-hmm.
where he wanted to tell it from the perspective of people will block it out or pretend that it's not happening, and they'll tell themselves lives until, you know, they're in the hospital.
Released right. A lively cut.
Right? Ask Zach all about how long that took.
4 hours.
Yeah. Two Justin Baldoni nose jobs out of 10. 5. Yeah.
It's a good call.
Because he shaved that fucker down after he did that.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You can see it.
Interesting.
Anyways. So there's your reviews, which is a perfect opportunity to transition to what we're talking about here for the second half of the show.
Floor is open.
So, yeah, just sat here, us three professionals, quote unquote, and we've told you exactly what we liked about some stuff and why we think you should see it. And the industry of reviewing, the change of everything's getting fucked up by technology. Can we all agree?
Agree.
Yeah.
Not
ruined, but just fucked up for a minute, right?
I hear that Tesla is doing well.
Tesla.
So. I love Tesla.
I'm a Tesla guy. Fucking Tesla's amazing. but the way the film industry, I guess I should say, technology is ripping through it without really seeing the wake it's going to leave behind. Right. The inception of AI. Is it, you know, The Brutalist, for example, using AI to change accents?
Yeah.
At what point do you say that's not an actor anymore? That's an AI algorithm. Right. I decided to take that lens and look at the review side of things, because back in the day, you used to trust very limited sources on who would tell you what's a good movie and what's a bad movie. You'd see it in the paper. You'd probably see it on an entertainment show. There might be someone doing something that's very focused on a specific channel, but like it was Siskel and Ebert or the Winnipeg Free Press for me. Mm-hmm. What was it for you?
Richard Moulton.
Leonard?
Oh, yeah.
Leonard Moulton.
Yeah.
Such a nice guy. He does a podcast with his daughter. You guys ever listen to
him? No, I didn't even know that.
Yeah, the two of them do a podcast.
I know he's still around. But yeah.
She asks him about it. But yeah, guys like Leonard Moulton, right? For you, who was it?
Richard and Roper. Ebert and Roper.
Ebert and Roper before Siskel.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, by the time Siskel passed away, and then Ebert and Roper started at the movies, the show, mm-hmm. come on at 10 o'clock on Sunday night on CTV, and I would record it, and I saved the episodes and rewatch it. It was like one of my favorite shows.
But you trusted these people.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Like, that's how I learned about Memento. I was like, a movie done backwards? That's insane, you know?
It wasn't a question or a thought. And now, today, right now, you've got sharing sites that are strictly just fans sharing their opinions. You've got algorithm-based sites like IMDb and Rotten Tomatoes that are using metadata to score things out, which is just coming in from God knows where. The critic is almost a dying position. I mean, they're still in the newspaper, right? Mm-hmm. You still got the New York Times. We've got two or three. I think Ben, what's his name? for the Winnipeg Film
Press, Waldman.
And before him,
it was Alison Gilmore, Randall King.
Randall King's been on the show, right? And like, I trust those guys to this very day, but it's starting to get murky. So I figured we'd have a conversation about it and see if here at the Real Debaters we can fix this problem. So.
Tesla. Kidding. I love Tesla.
It's your safety word now.
I don't know. It's just so funny in my head. It plays in my head.
Okay. So, Tony, how do you differentiate between the bullshit and a well-argued review? Like, what is a good review for you? How do you take into consideration?
I like a review that is actually trying to explain the movie to me as to what's the history behind it or why it was made and why it's unique and why it stands out.
A little
out,
bit about
right?
how the sausage is made, so to speak.
So for me, that's, you know, those were always the things that I enjoyed the most, right? Is if you see this movie, this is what really has been the arch of this character, and this is what was the emotional takeaway from it, and this is why we thought this was really a great standout piece of acting or writing or a story that we think you should see as opposed to all the other crap that's out there at this time, right?
The minutia.
So, so I do, like, I was a huge fan of Roper and of all those sit-down.
Yeah. Ebert and Roper were mean. Siskel and Ebert were fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
Right?
Yeah.
Like,
but one thing that I did appreciate, that they would usually have differing opinions.
For sure.
And which was always great. It was not just everyone agreeing that this is a great movie. They would bounce it back and forth. There would be a different review sometime or a different rating on it. And so you were hearing multiple different sides at one time. So I appreciate whether you are a professional coming at it that way or you're a blogger or you're someone
talking
just...
Talking out your ass.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sure.
So how about yourself? What do you...
I was going to say, too, Tim and Eric had their own, like, make fun of, like, Ebert or Roper. Like, not that they're making fun of them, but they did, like, their own version of it. It's very funny. It's on YouTube. I think for me, it's a... I think, for one, I do like hearing people. Like, I don't like reading reviews.
Yeah.
I've always been, like, a podcast or, again, Ebert or Roper, watching their shows, seeing some clips. I think, for me, I like a strong, understandable... like, I will say, log line, or like, this is the movie, and it's about this. And then after that, yeah, it's kind of what you're saying, like the little minutiae of like, so-and-so acting is amazing in this thing. They do well, you know. I don't need too much, and I don't need spoilers. I just need enough to get me interested.
Yeah.
And I'm gifted. I joke with my friend, I'm gifted with, as soon as I know I want to watch that movie, my brain kind of, even though I'll listen and watch a trailer or watch the whole thing, my brain will forget all the nitty gritties that I can enjoy the movie still without knowing too much. I can watch it and be kind of a blank slate. So
you have crumbs, you don't have pieces.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I'm not remembering all the review stuff. I just, like, I'm like, oh, okay, that's supposed to be good. And, you know, even trailers, sometimes if I'm watching a trailer on my laptop, I'll, like, after like a minute, I'm like, that looks good. I'll pause it, turn it off. I'm like, that's enough. I'm like, I'm going to watch it.
I remember when The Crying Game came out. I remember everyone trying to, you know, give their review without giving away the spoiler.
It's hard.
And I remember one newspaper gave it away and everyone blew up at it, right? Because they were trying to do this. They were trying to tell you why this movie was so phenomenal without telling you what the hook.
Yeah. Yeah.
Correct. And that was, I think, was a great way of writing it, right? Yeah.
I appreciate, like, I'll say, like Adolescence, for one, like, one of the podcasts I listened to, they said, just watch it. And, you know, that's what they kind of said, like, and we'll
less
talk about
more.
It later. Yeah. And I was like, okay, good enough. I trust these people. Let's go. And I think that's the thing, though. It's trust.
There it is.
And with Ebert and Roper, Ebert was obviously a name. Roper, it was the only show at the time that was specifically about movies. I was an ET Entertainment Tonight guy.
So was
Yeah, yeah. Like,
so,
I was,
John Tesh and Mary, what, Mary?
I don't remember the names,
Mary,
but I remember what they look like.
Yeah,
like, I don't remember
their
names. Yeah. Like, it's funny. Even, like, shows that were like that, but they even... like, pivoted into film sometimes, like Hard Copy and stuff. Like, I watch, you know, like they sometimes pivot
TMZ?
On
TMZ. Or like the local news, right?
TMZ was outdated at that point. But yeah, you're like, I also, my sisters used to get, or my one sister used to get, a yearly subscription to Entertainment Weekly.
Oh, yeah,
and
okay.
I
yeah.
had a yearly subscription to Adventure Magazine, which is the Disney version of like that. So like those were informations. Yeah.
Pound my fucking fist. Adventure Magazine. I am vividly remembering Tailspin on the front cover of Adventure Magazine.
I have that, yeah.
It was like Kids Entertainment Weekly. It was so good.
Okay,
it was
okay,
totally right what it is. Like,
yeah.
It was absolutely perfect. I like a review. I used to like a review that like had big words and like really like preached Stentorian. Well, not Stentorian, but just like had like the flashy words and the things that like the buzzwords and all that stuff. I'm more into if someone tells me how they felt coming out of the movie. I like a review that reflects the feelings of the scenes,
okay,
and the visceral effect that a movie can have on you, right? Like, as opposed to describing why the movie works, it's how the movie made them feel. Instead of describing parts of the movie, it's the character's journey, right? Like, leave out the big, you know, moments, the action beats, leave those out,
yeah,
and just give me something that's a little bit more like more personal.
Yeah.
I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I like more now. Like, I like how the sausage is made, obviously. But I also like walking away from a movie that I know nothing about and makes me feel something more than knowing all the little bits and pieces of it, right?
I was gonna say, I was complimenting you in your off mic, your letterbox. It was like, you know, just the paragraph about how you felt about the movie, you know? And I was like, that's all I need sometimes. Like, I appreciate those.
Right? And I mean, that's the thing, too, is that I can get really wordy on how I talk about things. Like, I like talking about this stuff, so I can go really long in the tooth.
Do you get upset if you read a review, they've loved it, they told you to go see it, you see it, and you have the opposite feeling?
No.
Like, are you mad, or do you actually like that a little bit more, going that you have a different view, a different take on it?
There was a time where that would butthurt me, that's a strong word. There was a time where I'd be like, what the fuck, right? Like, what do you, and that's...
You used me, Skinner.
Sorry, I don't get that.
I
do know the
Skinner.
Homer one where he's like, I can't believe he was his father. Yeah. And everyone in line is like, ah, Homer. But you know, I don't get upset because it's subjective, right?
Yeah.
Like, if you go into a movie thinking that there is a true review that defines this movie and it's not up to your expectation, I don't get jacked for all art. I don't get jacked for every movie, but I can try to see, like, It Ends With Us, right?
Yeah.
I'm shitting on it, but I can also see what it tried to be.
Yeah.
You know? And that, I think that's why movies are so great. You come back to the same piece of art, you take something out of it differently. So if someone tried to tell me that this is why it's so great, maybe I don't get that the first time, but now that I'm a little older, I'm like, maybe it'll come, right? Maybe I'm dumb. Maybe I'm not getting it. And then I go down a rabbit hole and then kind of put it together. Do you get, like...
So, I guess it depends on... there are some moments where, particularly when almost every, you know, review has loved the movie, and you go in there and you're just like, what the...
What am I missing? Right?
What am I missing? Yeah. What am I not seeing that you all...
Do you have an example?
You know, at the moment, no. That's the downer.
Well, okay. No, like, I have one that we probably haven't seen, but it's getting that.
Minecraft? No kidding.
Minecraft was made 4x4, right?
Yeah,
like
that. Yeah.
That one is that's a 2-quadrant movie.
Well,
video gamers 25 to 45.
But also, like, you know, for Rotten Tomatoes has that thing where they have the popcorn meter and the review meter, or the audience meter, which is
okay.
Like, basically just people liking, and you know, like reviews are bad for Minecraft, but the popcorn meter is like 80% because normal people love it, you know? It's like regular Joes.
Well, and that's what you want. That's what they're trying to do, right?
Right.
But I think the thing that I've read stuff and I'm like, I don't know how you can say this because you've chopped the movie up so much, but Snow White is on the tear right now.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think that's a great example of, I don't need to see that movie to understand why I wouldn't like that movie, but then I hear critics talking about it and I'm like, this isn't the same movie, okay? It's changing, like I don't care. Okay, I don't have a dog in the fight here.
Yeah.
But that movie, just like what I said about Wicked, is it's drinking its own Kool-Aid. It's getting up its own hype. So it's pulling in all the reviews from all the big prints, trying to make that a success because of what's happened politically and story-wise.
I saw that movie.
Okay, and tell me about it.
I can honestly say, for me, I did not care for the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Not because of all of why the critics were... you know, trashing on it because I think they missed. It was just a bad movie.
Right.
It's badly made, in my opinion. There is no joy. There's no Disney magic in this movie to begin with. So you would, if you just even focused on the bad acting, mm-hmm. the music that goes nowhere, and the no joy of a Disney movie, mm-hmm. that alone should have been enough. But everyone had to then add whatever new lens onto it. But that's a perfect example of a movie where the critics, from the moment it was announced, everyone shit on that movie.
Yeah.
Like, it was never, I don't think, going to rise above it.
And that's the thing, is that, okay, all right, we're getting into something here that we were going to get into anyway, so let's do it now. Everybody has an opinion. Everybody mm-hmm. has a phone. Everybody can experience the same thing in real time, mm-hmm. right? Where the benefits of Ebert and Roper and Entertainment Tonight, whereas it is the story,
sure.
right? It's their review. Mm-hmm. That is the story. And then it took forever for Wildfire to catch for everyone to be like, what the fuck,
yeah.
right? So I don't think we're going to get cult classics anymore.
Yeah.
Because there's too much shitting on things, whereas before, you know, it wouldn't do well. It would get review bombed by one or two famous critics, but then it would find its home.
Yeah.
And I feel that there was no online before, so things would catch organically. Where now there's going to be so much shit reviewed on a thing that it can't become a cult classic because it's got a bigger hill to climb.
Not necessarily. I think only because of online streaming now, there are things that may not do well in the theater itself that eventually may find its home on a Netflix that all of a sudden, like during, like a lot of people have rediscovered shows and they've all I can stream this all day long. So there may be, to your point, that some movies, once it hits onto, you know, Netflix or it goes on.
But only if they're featured, though.
That's
the biggest thing. A lot of stuff gets buried, you know?
Netflix is the graveyard of
yeah.
Once Upon a Time and almost could have been.
Well, right? Or the only dilemma would be is what Disney did on, you know, it decides that I don't want anyone to have this, so I'm burning it.
Yeah, yeah.
So I also don't have to pay you royalties. But I do think you might just...
Tax receipt.
I do think maybe that you might get a few cult classics later on. But I do see to where your point of going is back in the 80s, 70s, 60s, you know, you had
even
that...
the mid-90s to early 2000s, like before... Movie reviewing was mm-hmm. for the critic. Movie reviewing
right.
was for the
yeah.
industry.
It was for a professional,
yeah.
someone
yeah.
who had a potential background. Now movie reviewing on any podcast.
Is Joe down the fucking street
yeah.
shitting on Thursday night yeah. showing because he heard from 20 other friends it sucks and he's taking their word for it.
But I think the people that are actually listening to Joe, like, I don't know who's listening to Joe.
Joe's
like,
an echo chamber.
Yeah, yeah, like yeah. Exactly. Joe is like the trending on Twitter and something, whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But like, I know for me, like, I listen to the people that I know understand the art form or understand movies I like.
Yes.
Like, you know, so and I don't know many people that, you know, I was at a bar recently and the bartender and I were talking about movies and he's like, "Oh, here's the YouTube film people that do reviews
yeah.
that I like and stuff." I'm like, "You like the good stuff. Okay, I trust you now." So I'm like, I just think people that like us who like reviews, who look for reviews, are more or less only looking at the good stuff anyways. I don't know if Joe is, or the schmo who's just making content and writing bullshit reviews anyways is mattering much. I don't know. Maybe.
So then the question is, are we changing thoughtful critique for just, what's the fancy word I said, substance and popularity? Is that what's happening now? Do you can the review still survive because, like, the music store, right? Like the bookstore.
I think in its form, it's you're right. It's changing, but magazines changing,
yeah.
newspapers changing, all form of print is changing anyways, right? One hand, anyone now with a phone can post something on Twitter, on TikTok, on it, whatever they want.
Yeah.
It can either go really well one way or really bad another way. Like, you know, Sundance and the Toronto Film Festival relied heavily on reviews because these were upcoming, predominantly independent.
These need to get purchased.
They're
up for distribution, exactly.
They were small, predominantly independent movies, and you got one good review at the Sundance or out of Toronto, and it actually could launch your movie, right?
True.
Yep.
So
he's done it. He's played a TIFF Bell Lightbox.
Ooh.
Quite a few times, yeah.
That's buried in at the end there. That's
yeah,
what you
yeah.
begin with. sweet Jesus.
I've played TIFF a few times, yeah.
So I think that, you know, as long as for now that there are still these movie circuits, there's a potential still a requirement for a review. There is still a segment of our society where they don't want to make up a decision. They want to just hear from others, is it good or bad?
Blind leading the blind. Sheep.
So there's still a small segment. I think to your point, though, the critic who had maybe they went to film school, they got a PhD, they understand the breadth of history of movies. That job may be almost disappearing, but that job is disappearing from a lot of things. Mm-hmm. You can now decide based on your phone whether or not you'll vaccinate your child, regardless if a doctor told you.
Well, ChatGPT did.
Okay.
Fuck, there were so many things I wanted to ask you in that. Do you trust somebody who's gone to film school more than you trust somebody who hasn't, like, who doesn't, it's vocation versus occupation? Is that the thing I'm trying to sound smart by saying? Mm-hmm. Right? Like, you've got a 7-year film degree, right? Mm-hmm. You've made some movies. Or are you the Tarantino of film reviews where you just picked up and you know how to talk? And you're good. Like, what do you prefer? Do you prefer a professional or do you prefer an amateur?
I think a communicator. I don't think you need to be educated per se. You just need to know what you like.
Mm-hmm. Every film critic's going to shit on the show right now.
But I do think, like I don't know. Like, I don't think I'm. Sometimes I'm like, I can't even articulate why I like something, you know, like I just like it.
Sure.
Sometimes
happens every episode for me.
Yeah. You know,
what's a big word I need to use?
Yeah. It's like, I think it's just a matter of, like, it doesn't matter if film school or not. I think if you're a good communicator, and understand your own emotional or feelings or why, or can articulate why you like something.
Well, and that's
I think that's a skill set in itself.
Like, I'm not ashamed of this. I've been like, how do you review a film? Right? Like, I was like, totally. All the things with doing this show, I'm autodidactic, mm-hmm. right? I don't have a background in podcasting. I don't have a background in film. I just have a love of cinema and a shitty childhood with a big VHS collection, right?
Totally.
So like, everything was like School of Hard Knocks, pick something up, watch it, like it, don't like it.
See, I think that you've hit on the nerve for me because it's the love of film, right? So someone who went to film school, there's a love of film. So I like, for me, someone who has an in-depth knowledge, whether they got that from academia or from just 10 years of living in their basement watching tons of DVDs.
Watching the best, yeah.
Because I like to know that this reference from this movie in the 1940s and this shot, that's how Alfred Hitchcock had shot it in that movie. Oh, and did you notice on that wall, that poster
this is why I love you.
came from that little tidbit, that knowledge, that collection of acorns, for me, that's what I'm wanting to get out of that kind of review.
Totally.
Yeah.
Now, there are people who just also like it. It was how I felt out of it. And it has its own space. But I'm trying to absorb part of the history and all of
that's the stuff I like.
What is the background that built that you may not have known, and you have to go back and rewatch it.
I completely agree. I love that. I just, nowadays, with so much access to seeing so many trailers and so much marketing and being bombarded, it's more to me. Now, I will always trust a review like that, but to me now, the reviews that really get me are the ones, they're not poetic, they're just personal, right?
Yeah.
Like they touch on the human condition, the human spirit in it, whether it's a superhero movie or, you know, something up for an Oscar nomination. Mm-hmm. It's just how it why do you stand in front of it and look at it, right?
Right.
What did it do for you? Will I feel the same? Will I see the same in it? Mm-hmm. The movie will show me all the things you're talking about, and then I will go down the rabbit hole after and be like, okay, I'll do my own research and find out all those things. But in my review, I want to be fancied a little bit.
Fancy.
I don't know. So there was a time where Siskel and Ebert were golden. Leonard was the voice of everywhere for film and television.
Face of an angel.
Do you like IMDb and Rotten Tomatoes? Do you find them? You do use them, Tony?
I do use Rotten Tomatoes on some things,
so
right?
Like, that's your go-to.
I wouldn't say it's my go-to, right? I am someone who will actually go, if a movie comes out, I will go on different websites like Film Wiki and of that.
Sure.
Just pulling people's different perspectives from all over, their blogs, their writings on all of it.
Right.
But, you know, it's usually I will use Rotten Tomatoes for me personally when it's a blockbuster movie.
Tentpole.
Because the small independent movies, the smaller ones, I want to hear, because it's not going to get the most hype.
Exactly.
So I have to hear from other people and their different perspectives on it, right? Heretic, you know, is it in a different realm than any Marvel movie. So now I want to go on that to go, okay, you're going to filter all of the reviews, and you usually are spot on, you know, Rotten Tomatoes of this one as good as everyone's saying because you're filtering it out. But for the small independent, I'd rather hear all of these
Variety,
little,
Deadline, yeah. somebody who's like a niche film review site that's, yeah.
I think it's like, for me, it's kind of similar. It's like I need for the blockbusters, because I go to the movies a lot, mm-hmm. I go to the theaters a lot. Yeah. And I'm always down to go to the theater. The issue is these days it's like the quality has not been great for a lot of movies. So like when it's a big blockbuster,
we're coming out of dump months.
Yeah, it's true. But right. like, you know, there was like I was like, okay, what can I see right now that's actually good in theaters? Mm-hmm. And so I'll sometimes Rotten Tomato it. But yeah, for indies, I don't want to. If I already know I want to see it, I don't need a review to tell me. I'm just like, I want to just go see it without anything. I already know, and just the bare minimum.
Yeah, we do have to realize though that the three, like when you ask me when I see a movie,
yes,
the look on your face is, what did you think? Like you want the other, you want to collect three or four versions of it, mm-hmm. and then make your own decision, which is what I like too. But nowadays, with like, do you read the review before or after?
After, for me, sorry. I was just say after for sure.
Like, but you don't get to see it opening weekend and all the reviews are out. Are you reading the reviews after, or are you reading the reviews to not waste your time?
Look at the, like I said, like the Rotten Tomato number, look at just to see if I want to go to the theater for big blockbusters. Mm-hmm. But I'd say, if anything, as soon as the movie's done, I'll look at Letterboxd. But mainly, actually, I go on IMDb, and kind of what's similar to what you were saying about reviews and learning how they got to that, I love looking at like the trivia section of how things were made, why they were made, who was the casting choices, who was the writer on it, who's that, you know, like a lot
John Leguizamo ate a real maggot pizza in
what
Spawn.
What movie is that? Oh, in Spawn?
It's
oh my
a real
god.
Maggot pizza.
Oh, he's the clown guy. Yeah.
Like to answer your question, it depends on the movie. I know that's a cop out, but it does depend on the movie. Like
Cop outs with Bruce Willis and.
When Barbie came out, it was already blowing up. They were having Barbie Hammer and all that. I didn't want to read a single review because I just wanted to walk into that movie and just experience it.
Go for sure.
I didn't want to know anything about it, right? But there are movies that I want to, that I will read the review before, and then I'll review afterwards.
Right.
And then I will see how my opinion might have changed.
Where you fall on the scale,
It's usually those smaller, usually horror movies on some levels, right? Because also certain genres, right? For me, horror, people really love a movie a certain way, right? Or they will rip it to shreds in another way,
right?
There
is no happy medium.
No.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, objectivity has gone out the window. Mm-hmm. Nuance is gone. I mean, that in of itself in our culture, it's gone. Mm-hmm. So why would I expect it to be in the place of make-believe? It's the last place you'd find it.
I've been making a joke lately with my feature. And it's funny because today I ran into a friend at the gym and they're asking me like, oh, how's it going? I'm like, but the joke I've been making since like we started the process and went to camera and stuff was like, guys, we're shooting for 6 out of 10. That's all we got to make, a 6 out of 10 movie, because that's watchable.
Yeah.
That's where you watch a movie and you leave and you go, yeah, I don't feel like I wasted my time. You know,
everything's pretty much either.
I won't remember this, but that's if we can shoot 6 out of 10, if we hit 6 out of 10, we're fine. Anything above that's even better, but like 6 out of 10, because I think 6 out of 10 is watching a movie and not feel like you wasted your time.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, because everybody who gives it 50% is usually like, but 6 out of 10, you're over the hump.
But that's even, I kept saying that, but only recently I realized that's Rotten Tomatoes. Mm-hmm. 60% and higher is fresh. Like that's literally
how low the threshold is?
Yeah.
Oh.
Now, I'm not saying that that's a bad thing, but what I'm saying is that's the popcorn meter?
That's 60... it's just coincidence that I didn't even realize it at one point. I was like, oh, it's 60%.
Okay.
Popcorn meter is that. Like, it's 60% or higher is fresh.
We were talking about the Oscars. We were saying this year that it would be interesting to know that if Anora and Conclave were the top two, because the way they do the votes
I believe it was in my headspace.
But it's most ones, most twos, most threes, most fours, right? Like there's 10 movies.
Okay.
You vote, then they take, okay, this is how many people did ones, this is how many people did twos in that order, and then they redo it until they get their list, right? So they go from 20 down to 10, and then those get in there. But you never know how many more Anoras, how many more ones Anora had than Conclave had twos, right? Like if Conclave had 90 one spots, mm-hmm. and Enora had 92 one spots. That's a 2-point difference
yep.
that Enora snaked past.
Okay.
You don't know how many votes.
And we'll never
the
know.
Different, yeah. They'll no. never let you know.
No.
Right? Because Enora is still mind-boggling to me months later. I'm like, I'm trying.
Well, that's how Spotlight kind of took it. That was one that was like, you know, they snuck in. They snuck in.
But like, that's content. Enora does not have the level of content that Spotlight does.
Well, there's been several Best Picture wins that, you know.
Green Book, like, so many. This is what I'm saying.
As much as I know that the film industry for reviews and critiques and such is kind of like being a sommelier, right? It's those who are already in it allowing you to be in it, right? It's gatekeeping.
Yep.
Right? Because it just like they say it this is how we justify what we're doing.
Yeah.
At the same time, I don't know how responsible it is Rotten Tomatoes, and maybe I'm just playing the other side of the argument, but giving that much of the public that much access opening weekend. Because here's the thing. Review embargoes do exist, right?
The like TIFF and Sundance and stuff in these festivals, like they have their regular screenings and then they have press screenings.
Yeah.
In the times I've gone to TIFF, I'll sometimes with my badge I'm able to get into the press screenings and they're like quieter and you don't get trailers and stuff, which is or like any ads or anything.
It's business.
Just start the movie. But yeah, people are like in the amount of people one, like the you can see like at parties and stuff, you see people with press passes, I'm like, wow, there's so many. Like, I forget how many critics there actually are and how many press people, but like the only issue with press movies is people are on their laptops, they're taking notes and writing as they're going, and they're like, you know, and sometimes they leave like 30 minutes through the movie, and I'm like, are they going to write a review now? Like, I'm like questioning, I'm like,
you get my point, right? Yeah, like, these are the negative aspects of like, here's free reign, public.
Sure.
Yeah.
What are you?
It's hard to say, right? Because on one hand, you look at the Venice Film Festival and all that, right? Or Cannes.
It's right around the corner.
Yeah,
so Cannes being a big one, right? So movies will go to Cannes. They'll show at Cannes. They haven't been dispersed yet. No one's seen it. And all of a sudden, you will see flurry of love for certain movies. And now there's this giant hype. So like everything, all things, everywhere, all at once came out of Cannes. Everyone was loving it. So then you see the movie. I did not care for it. That's me.
Yep.
I did not think it was a great Best Picture at all. And so when I had
great movie, but not that.
No.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. But so then you, on one level, when you have the audience members going in there who are going,
okay, I see where
nope,
you're, yes.
This is bad. I don't like this. And I don't know why it got this great review. Because sometimes we do know certain movies. It's part of the film community's love of themselves.
Agreed.
There are certain movies that... Well, if it's about certain topics or all that, they will love it. They will fawn over themselves, especially if it's a movie about
Hollywood
itself, right? I mean, and we have to also, you know, remind ourselves through history, a lot of great publicity has been bought for decades,
and
right?
Enora spent $18 million to get that Oscar.
Exactly. So even today,
three times the budget, you know, to get that Oscar.
But back in the day, you could buy your review in certain papers to just... You know, and pay things off, right? Had a Hopper and her.
So have we always been lied to?
I think the industry knows that there was money moving in some way to tip favor to get a good review, so that movie
you can come to the Oscar party if you give me a good review.
Exactly, just to get it out of the door and to get it onto everyone's shelves and get it in through distribution. Right?
Yeah.
There are moments where we see small, tiny little films that just catch wind, blow up. You know, Slumdog Millionaire being one of those kind of thing. In the Name of the Father, these small little films that just
he's a baby
that just took off, right? But we also know that for some things, like particularly all of our Marvel movies, they know that if you do not make X amount of dollars in that first weekend, they're toast.
Oh, totally.
And so they need to just say the best and the glorious to get people through. So I actually don't technically undermine...
We're being jaded. Sorry, Ian. We're being jaded about, like, I was talking about how Enora all of a sudden became the hot topic, and it was like this year's Oscars was more about the PR agenda behind things than actual good film.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
But in a small way, even the Oscars changed itself to recognize that the public has a voice, right? We have 10 movies now because for the longest time, the largest box office smash, which one would assume based on people showing
it
up...
It has increased the spread for other things to get a chance.
You know, they were not, for some reason, being recognized in, you know... So we might not have had Black Panther being recognized for its art form if they hadn't been kind of motivated going... Actually, the public's dollar should also tell you that things
which
are
like. Which is the good side of allowing the public. It balances
nine?
It out.
Did they do nine this year, or was it the year before? They didn't do their full 10 1 year. They did nine, and it was like this thing. People are like, well, if you... they, but it's a choice. Like, yes. They don't have to. I do... I know in my brain sometimes I'm happy there's 10, but I'm also like, man, there's something about being the five.
Yes.
A little more special.
Prestigious.
Now,
correct.
Because of those things where I'm like, Black Panther's never going to win. Like, you know, it's that thing. But
did Black Panther win because we opened the spread, or did Black Panther get there because it was a fucking great movie?
Correct.
No, yeah, that's the thing. Well, you know, it's funny because now, like, the Golden Globes has, like, a popcorn movie, basically.
Sure,
they yeah. do.
And
yeah.
it's kind of like a dumb award, but it's like the movie that made a lot of money, Avatar, The Way of Water, this movie. You know?
Well, you got Vin Diesel coming out to announce it, and you're like, yeah, the billion-dollar franchise of
yes.
Fast and the Furious.
Oh, yeah.
We're talking about why this movie's popular, and it's not because of its content. It's because
right.
of its dollar value. Do you find it annoying now when someone says, you got to watch this? When someone else, when someone tells me I have to watch something, it's an instinctive anxiety attack because I'm like, there's too much, man. Like,
I think it's a I think
how do you take
days,
your friends and families when they tell you stuff?
I think it's a I subscribe to Criterion Collection.
Ooh.
I think there's like films, like homework films. Like I always
yeah.
you know I always call you know like movies you have to yeah you have to see that
the 10
yeah.
movies you need to watch to understand how to
yeah,
be a
yeah
filmmaker,
exactly
yeah.
or just in general like you know it's like. You never seen The Godfather? You never, you know, like,
yeah.
like but like, yeah, you haven't seen, like, Kurosawa, Seven Samurai? I was like, oh, 3.5 hours? Are you kidding me, man? But, like, I've seen it,
mm-hmm.
but, like, I had to watch it for homework, and it's amazing, but it's also, like, this thing where there's movies that are for sure homework. They're from our history. And I think that's funny, like, you know, it's not necessarily a review thing or a critic thing, but, like, Criterion is very funny about, like, these are, like, the Criterion best films, and they're basically the best films, you know, like of all time, the history, and those feel like homework films, and people tell you should watch them. And
everything's a homework film.
Everything's a homework. You're right. Yeah.
Even like Sunshine Cleaning.
Oh yeah.
Or Silver Linings Playbook. I don't know why I'm on the essence,
Sunshine
but like, like I,
does
yeah,
anyone
just...
remember that movie? I remember that movie, but no one remembers.
Steve Zahn's
movie.
Awesome in it.
Is it Amy Adams?
It's Amy Adams. Oh. Yeah. What's her face?
Someone else. Yeah.
From Emily Blunt.
Oh, really?
Emily Blunt's
Have you
sister.
Seen this movie?
No.
They clean up. They're a cleaning service just for dead bodies.
Yeah. She goes from being like,
so you're
saying fired from a
I have to
job.
See it?
It's a Sundance film.
It's
okay.
a Sundance
yeah,
film.
Yeah.
yeah, it's a good time.
Like 2014 and 13 or something. Yeah.
Okay.
I just like, if three people tell me to watch a thing, and the less they tell me about it, like Sean has maybe turned me onto this because she's like, don't tell me anything. Don't tell me anything.
Yeah.
Right? And like, I'd want to go in guns a blazing, knowing everything, reading all my reviews.
Yeah.
Ready to go with my cheat notes. Where now I'm like, want to know less. Want to know less because I want to draft my own opinion. I don't want to be told that I need to see this movie. I just need to be told I should watch this movie. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And saying you should watch it is a lot more than you have to watch it. Right. Why do I have to watch it? What is it? But like, why should I watch it? Should feels like it. I'm responsible for my film education by putting it in there. Right. But when you tell me I have to watch it, you're married to an idea in that film that I might not be. It's a different way of, I guess, communicating why you should watch a film.
Like, I'm not really.
It's aggressive language.
I'm not really bothered if someone said you should watch it. I do get bothered when someone looks.
Well, I'm saying you tell me I should, not tell me I have to.
No, I 100%. I get bothered when someone looks down on you because you haven't seen it, as if
I
somehow
used to do
there's,
that, but I've realized
there's something wrong with your moral fiber or you're an illiterate or something. So like, to your point,
that,
you should watch
Bros,
The Godfather.
Yeah.
I,
yeah, yeah.
But when they're like, you haven't seen The Godfather,
yeah,
and then they
that.
Go, what's wrong with you? And you're just like, I haven't gone around to see it. And I
yeah.
don't care.
I
to
have
see
a life.
It.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, exactly.
And,
I do
and
other
I,
things.
I'm learning as I get older that like, okay, we're not like you're. Not everybody's like me. It's always only child syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
How have you not seen this, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because I've always gotten whatever I've wanted. So it's like, how have you not? But yeah, there's not everybody nerds out like you, Petro. Not everybody, you know,
yeah.
knows The Godfather cold front to back. And it's okay if they haven't seen it, because when someone asks you if you haven't seen something, I appreciate when they don't jump down my throat. Doubly so now when I say I have a movie podcast. They go, you haven't seen that? And I'm like, it wasn't a requirement to watch every film in the last 100 years to
yeah,
start
yeah.
the show, motherfucker.
Yeah, we have blind spots.
Yeah, and it's and that's the best thing about it is that I always want a blind spot.
Yeah,
I always want someone to be like, hey, check this out.
Yeah,
right? I remember I had my very first girlfriend when I was like 18 or 19 or something. But like she, I remember her saying, "You really like, you like movies to a point that is like outside of my bubble. Like movies are like background noise for me. Like I'll put them on, but you like that. That is like recreational for you." And I was like, "Yeah." And I, it was funny when she said that because I realized, "Oh, I'm very different from other people." Like, yeah. That's like, I'm not, you know, that's a type of person. You can go.
No,
Diamond. Yeah. Diamond has discovered. There's a cat in the other room.
Yeah, I heard Bruno.
yeah. She was like, I want to play, but I don't know how.
How do I not hurt this thing?
Is yeah, pretty much. Me? Yeah, she was kind of like having her moment. So that's where.
Like, I trust you guys when you tell me stuff. When Jimmy tells me stuff, like I should be watch. Like he's like, you should be watching The Parenting and Your Monster. These are two new movies that he's watched. Brian Cox is in The Parenting. Parker Posey's in The Parenting. Lisa Kudrow is in The Parenting.
I watched it. I don't think you need to rush out and see The Parenting.
I mean, all right, fair enough.
But what
I'm saying is I'm more inclined to take your words for something. And to your point about the looking down thing, at the same time, I'm not defending this, but at the same time, I think you're a better person if you have. Like, I'm not saying you're a shit.
Yeah, I get it.
I am more inclined to be like, let's be friends.
Yes.
Than if you haven't seen something, but that doesn't make you less of a human if you haven't.
Sure. Like, if I may not necessarily be drawn to someone who only watches The Fast and the Furious. That's the only movies they watch. I may not feel that we have a lot in common because I love movies, but... Certainly, like if you just like rom-coms and all that, you know, great. But if you,
everyone has their home genre,
correct?
Yeah, I get. Like, I always talk about the popcorn film. I'm like, it's popcorn. Mm-hmm. That's a popcorn film. You're allowed to like popcorn films. I sometimes need a popcorn film. I have a friend who she only will watch romance movies. I remember I forgot what movie. I was saying like, oh, I'm gonna go see this movie. You want to come? And she's like, is there any romance in it? And I said, no, like, I don't know, but
also, trying to
like,
feel
like, I don't know, but she just, that's her genre. It's like, that's all she really likes watching is like rom-coms and anything with some sort of heart and love in it of relationships.
With everything we've said, we'll close with this because we'll close on a high note. With aspects to the public being able to vote, the influx of YouTube sites like New Rock Stars and Red Letter Media. Red Letter Media is what I came up on first for like video essays and all of that stuff. And I mean, it is a little adjacent to reviews because a lot of these are just, they're doing in-depth deep dives. But I think it's a blessing now that you have so much content at your hands.
Sure.
And feeling like, to go to a place where it's like, okay, Shauna doesn't want to sit and talk about this with me for hours, but I can go find a place where people are doing this, right? So technology has given us the blog and the channel and the message boards and all of that stuff, which is my point to me. Like, I don't know why you're not on Letterboxd yet. I think you would be brilliant.
It took me this
Letterboxd.
Year. Like, literally, but, like, I was also late to it. Like, and only now, it's, like, it was a thing, like, I don't want to clock every movie I watch. Even though I watch, it's because I watch too much, and I'm going to feel bad. I do feel bad because I watch too much, but...
Yeah, you see your diary, and you're like, do I have a life?
Yeah. They're like, you watch a movie every night. I'm like, I guess I do. That's insane. But, like, also, it's a thing now where it's more so my friends seeing what they're watching. Like, someone even...
That's the side
pocket. Yeah, like, I forgot. I was like, oh, yeah. I was like, yeah, you did watch This Ends With Us. So I'm like, hey, I saw you posted that.
I will log everything.
I do too.
That I watch. That's new. I don't.
I won't do TV.
Yeah. Well, miniseries are on there now.
Yeah.
They are trying to get into TV. I know. I don't want TV on there. I want it to stay. He's not wrong.
Like, no, that was a great.
It needs to stay with the medium.
Yeah.
Right? The miniseries is just a badly edited movie. I think we can all agree to that.
It's hard to say. White Lotus was technically supposed to be a miniseries. Now it's
Like, now it's a series. So that's why
there's carryover actors. So.
100%. But yeah, Letterboxd is one of the biggest blessings, I think, in the industry when it comes, like, because IMDb and Rotten Tomatoes and the movie database, like, they all were about, it wasn't about the social aspect of it. It was about having a, go ahead.
I was going to say I disagree, because IMDb was, well, I was a big, like, again, I felt like a lone wolf. As a kid,
maybe I didn't utilize it properly,
but it did have a message board section on the bottom. At one point, and it got
Like OG days,
OG days, and it was terrible. It was awful to post on there. Like, it was just like not well made. But yeah, it also got just trolled a lot. Mm. So it just, I think eventually it got rid of it. But I was very much a person that was involved. Like, I didn't know there was people that like movies. I was very much my own. So that's where I found like a
it's
lot
finding
of
your kind,
finding my kind,
your tribe, as they say, right. Yeah.
I think I discovered it on chat rooms back in the day. That's because I discovered Survivor had a chat room, and then I discovered chat rooms because I wanted to talk to people about Survivor, and I didn't really have friends that watched Survivor, and this is like season one.
You gotta look.
And then I found movie chat. There must be movie chat rooms, and I was like, oh my god, Ain't It Cool News has like a movie chat room, and like yeah.
It's such a good site because it's like, okay, if you want to review and that's all you want to do, great, yeah. Do that. But if you just trust other people's reviews,
okay,
and you can find Variety on there, you can find Deadline on there, and they do their full, like, they take what they put on the website and they put it in their review, yeah. Right? But nice. It's just like-minded folks sharing ideas about things that they think you should watch. And it's really fun when you start to build up your role because, like, most of the people that I'm following are way younger than me. So they're finding Amadeus for the first time.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Oh.
They're finding American Pie for the first time. And it's really fun to read reviews of people who are younger than you or, you know, they're in the middle of Zimbabwe reviewing this, right? Like, because you can see their profile pic and whatnot. So you're like, this is where this perspective of this, like, I only have my perspective.
Yes.
So when you get to see other perspectives... Plus, how do you not like a fucking website that asks at every red carpet what anybody's four favorite movies are? How long did it take everybody to be like, that's the question we should have been asking?
What do you pay for Letterboxd?
I do.
I knew it.
I do. I have now upgraded to the yearly $25 donation. It gives me a data file on what I watched, who I like to watch the most, what genres I watch from most to least, how much screen time I put in my entire year. It basically kicks out a Michael Petro portfolio.
Wow.
It's really cool. It's like one time. Like,
someone comes from money. Wow.
Do you see any kids in this house? Like,
I know.
Do you see the room I'm sitting in?
You fancy.
Yeah,
well,
yeah.
Well, I want the algorithm for this because this is me, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Where I have a problem with today of letting the algorithm do too much.
Okay.
With everything. So, yeah. I mean, whatever.
Dude loves statistics. Sorry, I was trying to. Yeah, my brain died there for a second. The joke died. I'm sorry.
Listener, if you have a review of this week's episode, we would love to hear it. We would love to hear what you like in a review, what you don't like in a review. If you like our reviews, you can follow me separately from the Real Debaters. I throw my reviews on my Instagram. But yeah, if you want to comment, we have a voicemail. It lets you say whatever you feel like about this show, about these topics. Leave a voicemail. You get up to 3 minutes. It's in the show notes. And then we'll play it on the show. And you don't have to name yourself. You don't have to out yourself. We're not here to be like Susie Jenkins from East Kildonan. Like, you can be Wonder Woman from East Kildonan if you want. You can be Michael Keaton.
Johnny Mnemonic.
Fuck, yes.
John Q. Denzel Washington.
John Cusack.
Yeah, John Cusack. What's another John movie?
John? No. What's the one with...
It's All Gone. Pete Tong?
Dong?
No.
No, what's the one with Joseph Gordon-Levitt where he's like...
Don John.
Thank you. Fuck, I nailed it.
Yeah,
Johnny Be Good.
Johnny Be Good is a movie.
Is it?
I think it might be, yeah. Mm-hmm. From the 80s.
Yeah.
I don't know it, but I'm pretty sure it's a, like a teen... Yeah,
Johnny, if you're out there, leave a voicemail is what we're saying. I have... I've been Roger.
I'm Ian.
I'm Antonio.
You're supposed to say Ebert in the fucking moment.
I'm Roper.
Fuck you guys.
I'm Roper.
John Tesh.
Yeah. Thank you. Piano playing motherfucker in the corner. We've been your Real Debaters. Thanks for listening and watch all the movies. And so bye, everybody.
Bye.
Oh, if you have any problems, dial information. Thank you for calling.